And it all comes down to this. Two teams have survived the blood and guts and some tears to reach the Stanley Cup final. We got the Chicago Blackhawks from the Western Conference and the Boston Bruins from the Eastern Conference. An original six matchup, Otto. What else could a hockey fan ask for?
Oh, you say original six. We all know the debate over that one. But hey, it's two storied franchises. They have never faced each other in a cup final before. And as far as the matchup goes, we could see just about anything this series. Should be pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think when you have watched the whole playoffs, the two best teams have made it really to this point. I think Boston, you know, had that terrible end of the regular season, in part probably because of the tragic events at the Boston Marathon. We all knew Chicago was the class of the Western Conference. And so I really think this is probably one of the best matchups that the NHL could have gotten outside of Chicago-Pittsburgh. But this is an intriguing matchup because it provides some big names on both sides, but it also two different styles. Chicago's got the speed and the flash, and then Boston's bring the lunch pail and go to work.
As they've been saying, though, the Chicago guys don't like being compared to the Flash of Pittsburgh. They know that they can play defense and win some of these games that Pittsburgh couldn't win when it was 2-1, 1-0 games. They know they can hang right in those and pick something up at the end, unlike Pittsburgh. So they haven't been caring for those comparisons.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've seen that quote a couple times. I believe it was a couple of defensemen, I think it was Oduya and actually winger Andrew Shaw saying, yeah, we've got the talent to match Pittsburgh, but we play defense. So should be a great series. You know, it's going to be something that I'm really excited to see.
Absolutely.
But before
game one is already in progress as we start our podcast here. Yes, we have both made our picks already. So as we make them in the podcast and it finally gets posted in whatever way we decide to get it up there, you will know that our picks were made ahead of time.
Absolutely. There's no funny business here. You know, before we get to that, we can get through some other stuff on the around the league. And also the AHL, and then we'll end up with our puck picks, or you want to go with the puck picks now?
Well, we can go around the league first. We'll start with that.
All right. So I guess the biggest news, we've had a ton of head coaching vacancies open up, and you and I had discussed off the podcast, maybe everybody's waiting for to see what Pittsburgh does with Bielsma. And we finally got our answer. Ray Shiro, general manager of the Penguins, announced a 2-year extension for Bielsma and all of his assistants. So Bielsma will be off the market for every other team in the NHL.
For the time being, at least. And at least until the start of next season, they see where they go from there. But as far as the decision goes, I agree with it. You look at the success that this team has in the regular season on a regular basis, there's no reason to get rid of a coach that clearly can win. He needs to work a little bit on finding out how to make the minor changes that you need to make in the playoffs. But as far as they're keeping most of the same roster come next year, and there's no reason that this team can't continue to dominate the regular season, and if he can figure it out, you know, they can make another run in the playoffs. It's not that they haven't done anything. They just haven't performed to the expectations of winning a cup 2 years removed.
Well, you gotta remember, they won a cup, you know, his first year when he came in halfway through the season. And then ever since then, Crosby's been hurt. Malkin got hurt right at the end of the season 1 year. Last year, neither one of them was really healthy. And then Fleury just imploded in the playoffs this year and last year. You know, so this year was really only the first time that he had his full roster going into it.
You can't even really call it a full roster. Crosby was still playing with the effects of the broken jaw and a full face shield. So while it may have saved him from a pummeling by Chara, he's still not quite the same player he was without it, you would have to imagine.
Right, I can agree with you there, you know, but you also have to remember, only one team can win the Cup every year, and I think it's, you know, the combination of the standard that has been set in Pittsburgh, that they expect to see that team, you know, when you have two of the best players in the league, that you're going to be in the finals, and it doesn't necessarily mean that every year. And, you know, as you and I have talked a lot, it's more than just talent that gets you to the finals, get you to the Cup championship. You know, you're going to have a couple bounces go your way, a couple breaks here and there, and this year it just didn't happen for Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
What it also means is that Marc-Andre Fleury will be manning the nets in Pittsburgh again next year. There was a lot of speculation maybe it was going to be a compliance buyout. If Bylsma was fired, Bylsma's been very outspoken saying Fleury's his guy. And, you know, I can't argue with that considering he did win him a cup. He did play very well in other than the last two postseasons. He's proven he's a pretty good playoff goaltender. And, you know, sometimes you just get in a rut, and I think he got stuck in the rut at the wrong time.
I do think that part of that support that Bylsma throws out there has to do with the fact that you can't just bail on him either way. Because if you bail on him, his stock price plummets and takes any confidence out. Nothing's to say that they're not shopping around trying to find somebody to bring in or looking at somebody in the draft still. You know, he says it for now, and they see where they go with it. If something pops up, I wouldn't be surprised to see him take it.
Well, but with all the other goaltenders that are available, are you really going to take a guy who just choked in the playoffs 2 years in a row and has a $5 million hit?
Yeah. But right now, the cost of getting some of these other players is also high, so you're not surprised to see him hang on to just the $5 million hit, too. So
that's very true.
We'll see where it goes. There's a lot of options there if they do decide to go, but as of right now, they've got a vote of confidence from the coach and the team general manager in Fleury, so we'll see if they do stick with him, and if they does, if he can have the postseason success like he does in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years for Bylsma is a little bit of a vote of confidence. It's not a huge vote, you know, from Ray Shiro. I think it's basically, we're going to see what you're going to do next year. And because you really, the way you look at it is, you very rarely do you see a coach go into his last season on a contract because, you know, the lame duck theory, you know, the guys aren't going to work for him, all that stuff. And so really, I look at it as it's a 1 year deal. And if you don't shore up what we just saw in this next season, then you're going to be gone.
And there's major changes coming in that roster, too, potentially, in 2 years from now. Not this offseason, but the following. So
yes, when Letang and Malkin both are UFA.
So
what do you think about
this year will dictate a lot.
What do you think about Bylsma for possible U.S. Olympic coach?
I'd be okay with that. He's got a cup. Granted, it was his rookie season of it. But, hey, why not put a guy in there for his rookie international debut. Maybe he'll win a gold medal there, too. He does well with a team full of stars in Pittsburgh, so I don't see why he couldn't do well with a USA hockey team.
My thoughts exactly. Other coaching moves. Kind of a surprise move, at least in my opinion, but also a good move. Dallas Eakins gets hired as Edmonton Oilers head coach after a Skype firing of Ralph Kruger. Thoughts?
I love the hiring. And actually, I'm okay with the way they did the firing, too. I did hear that he was over in Switzerland, I believe. So telling him to come all the way back to fire him was kind of uncalled for. And your only other option is sending somebody over.
It's kind of I'm dating a girl out of town, and I don't want to drive all the way out there myself to break up with her, and I don't want to be the dick who makes her drive all the way out to break up with her at my hometown. So, yeah, text message sounds good. Here you go. Not that I've ever done that, but hey, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying that's what it kind of seems like.
It happens. As far as the hiring goes, I love it. You've got a guy that's been successful in Toronto with younger guys. You're bringing them in, and what they've had so far in Edmonton hasn't worked. So you got to switch it up. You got to try something different, and I think this is very different from where they've been. It's a great, great move for them.
I think it's interesting that Kruger only got one season, considering he was the guy the players all loved. You know, when Rennie was there, Kruger was his assistant. He's been there, an assistant there for a couple of years before he got hired as the head guy. And, you know, it was interesting that that's who the players wanted. They wanted Kruger to be their head coach, and they really didn't play for him. So,
yeah. And a new front office regime takes over up there, and, you know, changes are going to be made. And that was the first one to fall. We'll see where else they decide to go with it. But
yeah, and
as far as player personnel.
The other thing I really like about it is Edmonton, or McTavish, the GM now for Edmonton, targeted Eakins as his guy, as the guy he wanted to run his ship to get his guys to where he wanted them to be. And instead of just by chance or waiting for the next Dallas Eakins to come through, okay, because it's everyone assumed that Eakins was going to get hired by somebody this offseason. Instead of waiting for the next hot AHL coach to come up, he said, no, this is the guy I want, so I'm going to clear out the space for him, and I'm going to go get him. And so it also means that, you know, there's no Brian Burke, Ryan Wilson move, or, you know, situation where Wilson was already in place before Burke got to Toronto, and just like Vigneault was already in place in Vancouver before Gillis was in Vancouver. So there's no doubt that the coach is the GM's guy, and if the coach doesn't get the players to play or doesn't like the way the players are playing or anything like that, the players are going to be the ones that are getting shipped out as opposed to the coach.
Yep, absolutely. It's a good move for Edmonton. As a Wild fan, I hope it doesn't pan out quite as well as it could potentially, but I think it will. I think it's going to be real good for them.
Absolutely. Still have openings in New York for the Rangers. Talk about Lindy Ruff and Elaine Vigneault possibly going there. And the way I look at it, whoever doesn't get that job is going to get the Dallas job. And everyone's still waiting for Dave Tippett to decide what he's doing, or really to decide who's owning the Phoenix Coyotes.
And Vancouver's still available.
Oh, Vancouver as well. Apparently Tortorella is interviewed up there as well. Enough of the coaching stuff.
Wrong makeup in Vancouver to bring Tortorella, I think.
I don't know, because think about the team he coached in Tampa Bay that won the Cup. Granted, it was before the lockout, okay? But he had a hell of a lot of offensive talent up top, just like he would in Vancouver. He had Cavalier, he had St. Louis, he had Brad Richards. Dave Andrechuk was older, but was still on that team. Prospel was around there. You know, so there was a lot of talent offensively, and other than Dan Boyle, there wasn't a ton of defensive talent. And I would say the goaltending's comparable, Hobby Boulin back then to Corey Schneider or Luongo now.
Yeah, that's true. I just, at the first thought of it, you know, his sacrifice for the team, block shots, play defense, it's what they wanted in the Rangers system, and the Stars didn't give it to him. So you wonder, it just makes me wonder anyway, what they'll do in Vancouver after having seen it not work in New York.
Will the real John Tortorella please stand up? Please stand yep. up. Enough of coaching stuff. How about two big storylines going into the final? I guess in the East. I know this was a play that even though you and I hadn't talked about it, I know that you had to have loved watching Gregory Campbell's effort after getting a broken leg on a block shot and just. Gutting out probably 56 another
6 seconds.
No, yeah, an entire shift basically after taking a puck to the to the leg and breaking his leg. Interesting side note, the Major League Baseball draft just occurred last past week, and in the New York Yankees draft room, they had a picture of Campbell on the ice after his broken leg, and somebody had put the statement underneath it saying, "This is the type of character we want to draft."
Aha, I like it.
And, just complete and total
sacrifice.
Demonstration of commitment and desire and just gutting it out. And can I just say, he's a former Amerik.
Yes, you can feel free to point that out.
So, just one of those things. It was a great scene for hockey, and it makes you kind of proud as a hockey fan to say, "Oh yeah, that's the sport I follow."
Yeah, and nobody, everybody makes the reference in football to players being out with turf toe. Something that could play through, but it hurts, and you watch a guy go out there, break a leg. I have no doubt the turf toe is extremely painful, but he'd finish out a minute shift with a broken leg. Yeah, it just doesn't compare.
And not only did he finish the shift, but he finished the shift, stayed in position, and still was blocked. He blocked a pass, and still
and he tried to block another shot.
He tried to block another shot.
Hit somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, so it wasn't like he was out there just kind of standing in the corner. He was out there, and he stayed in his zone on the penalty kill.
Yeah. So it was incredible. It really was.
And then over in the Western Conference, not such a great scene. In the LA Kings and Blackhawks, I believe it was game 3, Jeff Carter knocked off the glove of Duncan Keith, and as Keith was going down to pick up his glove around center ice, Carter kind of gave him a nonchalant whack at the hand, to which Keith didn't appreciate whatsoever and came up with a very blatant high stick towards the jaw, chin, face area of Jeff Carter. Got him a bunch of stitches and a couple teeth, I guess, got knocked out or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he only received one game suspension for it. I guess I'll take this one first, Otto. I don't know what your thoughts on it. We haven't talked about this one. It's things like that I think need to get handled more than a dirty hit or like a Torres-type hit, okay? I think anytime you start swinging the stick, anytime there's an attempt to injure or a non-quote-unquote hockey play, it needs to be dealt with more severely. It's things like that don't belong in the sport that I just can't understand why. And I know the theory is, one playoff game is two regular seasons game for a suspension, and possibly because of who Keith was, that could have played a part in it, and it was midway through the series, so if they had suspended him, he would have finished the whole series out, could have been more games, and all that stuff possibly plays a factor into it. But when you've got somebody swinging a stick, and granted, he apologized, and he, at least acted like he didn't mean to hit him in the face. He still swung his stick up high at a guy, at another player.
Yeah, I see your side of it. I'm on the other side. I knew he was going to get a suspension for it because he hit him in the face. But watching the whole sequence that led up to it, he took a shot off the hand. When he swung, I really doubt he was aiming for the face. I think he was looking to give him one in the arm somewhere. Send a message, say, "Hey, yeah, don't do that." But like you said, though, on the same side, you can't do it. You can't get a guy in the face. It's a bad image for the game. But as far as I was concerned, I knew the suspension was coming. It was what it was. It looks bad. But, if he hits him in the elbow pad or the shoulder pad, there's probably not even a call. It was a one-handed swing with its left hand across his body. So I don't know. It is what it is. The suspension was deserved because he got him in the face. But I don't have any doubt that that wasn't the intention of the play. And I know that's not the point when it comes to it. But that's just the way I feel about it.
I just think that he's got to know that that there's a chance if I swing my stick at his shoulder, that whether he ducks, he's turning, anything like that, I'm going to catch him in the face, and that's going to be a major problem. So if you're going to give him that, hey, like, I don't appreciate that, you know, stick tap or whatever, hit him in the hip, hit him in the side, like, you know, whatever. Yeah. Get him down. It's just like it's just like last night in the D-backs Dodgers game, to get change sports on everybody. If you're going to hit somebody, plunk them in the ribs, plunk them in the butt, you know, in the leg, whatever, but stay away from the shoulders and up. And that's why everybody, if Kennedy had hit Greinke in the butt or in the shoulder, or it's not even the shoulder, excuse me, if you hit him in the butt or the ribs or in the back, that's one thing. But when you hit him in the face or in the helmet, it's getting too close to home, and that can be career-ending injury. And so it's just like that. I mean, I know he didn't mean to. If he goes and taps him and catches him underneath the visor and his eye gets gouged out, then what?
Yeah.
So I just...
And that's where I agree, is that there should be a message sent to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And that it should cross your mind that, hey, if I do this, I'm going to be done for a while. So that part I agree with. Mine's more on the intent argument of it.
Oh, there's no doubt. Which is
part of the league.
There's no doubt in my mind that the intent was to say, hey, that, you know, screw you for almost cutting my hand when you skated by, you know, or chopping by. Yeah. But, you know, I just, there's things in the game, you know, a hit, a guy turns and you get him from behind as opposed to getting him on the shoulder, whatever. And, you know, by all means, suspend a guy, but give him a game for that, and in my opinion, Keith should have gotten at least 2-3 games for getting a slash in the face when nowhere near the play.
And causing many, many stitches as well.
Absolutely. So, rant over.
We're still on kind of notes from the conference finals, I do have two more.
Okay.
Don Cherry had a rant on his Hockey Night in Canada about no-touch icing and how it's essentially ineffective. His argument was a little off from mine. He was saying that the players don't understand it, but he did work his way around to the idea that if the offensive player gets there first, the play stays live, and you're still going to get the same collisions. I was just happy to hear somebody on the national level with the same mindset as me. I've been arguing that since they started talking about hybrid icing, and everybody else I hear just says it's a great idea. So I heard that on his podcast the other day and was glad to hear it. And my other one was, there was a hit. I wish I would have wrote it down, but I didn't. It was in the Boston and Pittsburgh game. It was right after the hit where Matt Cook got thrown out of the game.
Okay.
There was a Boston guy, goes into the corner. He knows he's being pursued because he looked over his shoulder. Starts going up the boards, turns to go back down the boards as the guy's starting to hit him, goes face first into the boards. No call on the play. I agree 100% with no call on the play. And watching players turn back into the boards drives me absolutely insane, especially when you've looked over your shoulder to see if the guy's coming. I don't know if they do it to try and draw a penalty or if they actually think they've got a play to try and turn back, but either way, trying to do anything to draw a penalty where you put yourself in a dangerous position and the guy coming at you has no choice but to hit you, it drives me nuts every time I see it happen.
Yeah, you know, it's taking advantage of if I get the penalty here, you know, everyone's gonna be happy with me.
And he's gone, and the other guy's gonna be gone for five in a game if it's bad enough. You know, it just I don't see where, A, it's fair, or good sportsmanship for that matter, and B, it's you're putting yourself at risk. If he does hit you in the just the right spot, you could be out for the rest of the playoffs yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. All right, we can move on now. We both had our rants.
On to pucks, as if you're listening for the last two, three podcasts here. Otto and I have changed the way we give out our predictions for the playoff matchup. You get 30 pucks between for each team. Each matchup. So it'd be 10 pucks for offense. You know, you split them up between each team. 10 pucks for the defensive qualities that you think they have. And 10 pucks for the goaltending. So whoever has the most pucks, for the most part, you end up picking for that round. So,
and I regret taking my going against my pucks in the last round there with Pittsburgh.
Yes, indeed. That was not your finest moment.
No.
I'm trying to find my pucks picks. So why don't you start with yours?
All right, I can start us off. I'll start with the offensive side of the puck. I think you've got two dynamics in this matchup. You've got Chicago, who has your flashy, high-scoring offense, but they do know how to play a defensive style of game. They know how to do it both. They've got their top two lines that'll match up with anybody in the league and outscore them, and then their bottom two lines, they're going to hold their own. Their fourth line isn't quite as strong. Their third line is going to be right there, though. Boston plays the other way, where they've got four lines that are going to go out there and grind and score goals. I think these two, they both kind of offset each other. For this, I went 5 pucks apiece. Boston's so deep, 1-4, and Chicago is so powerful, 1-2. I think they end up evening out. On the defensive side of the puck, I think Boston just shuts down teams a lot better than Chicago does. They held the Pittsburgh power play, which we thought was going to be a huge difference in the last series, or at least I did. They held them without a goal through the whole series, even though Boston didn't score a goal or a power play goal in the series either. But just that high-powered offense that Pittsburgh has, they're faltering, I think, is a lot of credit to Boston. Chicago, they're strong defensively, no doubt about it. They don't have any of the workhorses like Chara that everybody knows. They do have a couple guys back there that most people do, but it's not Chara. You know, the big guy that you put against your best player, and your best player's probably not going to score. So defensively, I went 6 pucks to Boston, 4 pucks to Chicago. In goal, I think both goalkeepers are adequate. They're not going to give away a series. I don't think either one of them is necessarily going to steal the series. I split the pucks on this as well. I went 5-5. Overall, it goes to 16-14 to Boston. I'm going to stick with the pucks this time. I think Campbell's going to hurt him a little bit, but I think overall, just they're so deep, and they're ever since that third period in the Leafs game, they've been rolling. I think Boston takes it in 6.
All right. Well, I'm so glad, Otto, you picked Boston, because for me to catch you in points, I need to pick the whatever you don't pick, and I need to get the games right to get the max 3 points and have you get nothing. So for that being said, I'll give away my pick right now, I guess. My pick is going to be Chicago in 7. I think that this series, each team's going to take a game on the road, and just I think eventually Chicago is going to take it in 7. But the way I broke it down in goal, you know, I think everyone's overlooking Corey Crawford. I really do. I think that he's got the best goals against average in the playoffs. And he really has made some big saves, and he's played some good some big overtime games for them as well. Tuukka Rask, though, on the other hand, has been just as dominant. So I gave both guys a five. You know, I split it 5 and 5. Thought it was really even. Defensively, you said it. The defensive team mindset for Boston is unreal. They got Chara, who they can put on the Taves line, and then they can put Bergeron against the Kane line or the Hossa line, whoever is away from Taves. And just as a team, forwards and defense, Boston's defense is second to none. Offensively, I'm going Chicago 6 pucks to 4. I think the fact that Bickle has woken up in this playoff, they're top six. I mean, you can put those six guys with anybody, with any combination of those six, and you could end up with a hat trick on each line. I mean, those lines are just phenomenal. I mean, the fact that if they put Taves and Kane together, okay, no problem. We'll put Brandon Saad on that line, and oh look, we've still got Bolin, Sharp, and Hossa on the second line, and and some people say that Hossa is one of the best two-way players in the league that's not named Jonathan Taves. That's not a center, So I think Chicago is just really, really loaded up front, and not that Boston isn't, but I think they lost a little with the loss of Campbell. I mean, they lost a lot, don't get me wrong, but offensively they lost a little because it just threw off some things. Tyler Seguin's playing on the fourth line with Daugavins and Thornton. I mean, that's not what you expect out of Tyler Seguin going into this series. Granted, Krejci, Horton, and Lucic are just on fire. I mean, Lucic has been a beast, the last couple games. And it'll be a good matchup. But so it gives me 15 pucks apiece for each team.
I assume you went 6 pucks to Boston to 4 on defense.
Oh,
I don't
think
you overstated it.
I didn't? Okay, well, yeah, 6 to 4 on that for Boston. So that gives me 15 apiece. And even though I really think Boston will win it, I got to pick Chicago just in case they do win it, and I can say I had a possibility of catching you. I got to leave that option open.
I have to say I'm rooting for Chicago to win this, being a fan of the Western Conference and their style of hockey. But somehow in the finals, we ended up with a matchup where it's more of Chicago with what you would consider to be the Eastern Conference style and Boston with more of the Western. But, hey, whatever it takes to get there, I suppose.
I mean, personally, I love watching Boston play, because almost every guy on that team finishes their check, and there's just no quit. And they have a couple former Amerks, Danny Paillet's out there. I already mentioned Campbell, and don't forget one of the greatest former Amerks, Doug Huda.
How did you pick against Boston with Huda behind the bench?
Because you made me pick against Boston because I have to catch you.
All right, that's fair.
My competitive nature is not letting me pick with you. I can't concede defeat.
All right. Do you have the standings in front of you for AHL or NHL?
I do. 1 second.
If you could read those off, I know you stated what you needed, but just so we can go through them.
For the NHL going in, I picked Boston. I picked them in 6 last round. But I needed the 3 points. I only got 1. So that gave me 13. We both missed on LA, which is why Chicago's in the final. And you also missed on Pittsburgh. So you stayed put. I gained 1 point. So it is 16 to 13 for you in the NHL standings.
Do we have a tiebreaker or a wager on this?
I don't know
if we ever wagered.
I don't think we have a wager. I think it was just for shits and giggles, so to speak. The tiebreaker, why don't we say we'll pick a Conn Smythe?
Ooh. You're going to have to give me a day to think about that, though.
All right. The Conn Smythe will be off air. We'll pick. And, Yeah. So, in the AHL, Jay had a wonderful round. Jay came back, and he picked up 4 points. He got both series correct. He got Syracuse in five, like I did, for the 3 points in that series. And then he also picked Grand Rapids, the only one of the three to do so. Otto, you picked up 1 point, picking Syracuse in six. And so you got 1 point there. And I am 1 point behind the two of you. I picked Syracuse in five, giving myself 3 points for that. But I missed on Oklahoma City. So you and Jay are tied with 13 apiece. And I am 1 point behind in with 12, excuse me.
And at the current rate that they're going, we are all going to stay exactly right there.
Absolutely.
Syracuse at home just couldn't score enough goals over Grand Rapids to get the win.
Yeah, you know, I think that was kind of a case of Syracuse took care of their series pretty early. Grand Rapids had to scrap and claw all the way through seven, and I think came in just hot. And if I look right now, they were playing Game 3 in Grand Rapids tonight, and that game is in the third period tied 2-2.
So another good one.
So another close game there.
So we'll have to come up with a tiebreaker for that, too, and let Jay know.
Tiebreaker, yes, absolutely. Thoughts on... Oh, where did it go? Do you think the series has any impact, or any thought to the East not playing the West at all this year?
I think the biggest impact, I think there's two. There's the media impact that the people in the TV stations and around the league, and even us sitting here, you can't look at the records against similar opponents and say, oh, well, they did this, and they did this, and against this kind of team from the West, they did this. So it makes it harder to predict the series here, I think. I had another reason I thought it was going to impact it, and I don't know where it went. So if I think of it while you were giving your thoughts, I will share them.
Well, I don't think it really has any bearing on it. I mean, it might have affected... might have affected the standings and the seedings these guys came in. You know, you get a team like Boston goes out on a big long Western road swing and goes 2-4 on the big Western trip or something like that. That's going to cost them some points. So maybe they end up fifth instead of fourth, or, you know, something small like that. Or a team, you know, Chicago's in the center of the country, so it's not so bad of a, you know, dramatic road swing to come east, but. So I don't think it really has much to do with it, because you still wouldn't have played each other in the playoffs leading up to...
Correct.
Leading up and to it, it.
And it only would have been one matchup anyway. It's not like you would have played each other enough to learn anything about the other team. A lot of times when an East is playing a West, unfortunately I know from watching Minnesota coming to Buffalo, you don't see... your star players play if there's even a hint of injury. I've never seen Minnesota's starting goalie play when they come to Buffalo. It's always the backup at the time.
So. Well, that's because Buffalo sucks and they can lose. They can get beat by a backup.
Yeah, well, they're 1-2 in three games I've been to. So. Yeah.
You know, I've heard some people say that they think maybe it'll take this series a couple games to get going as far as the nasty side. But you know what? Any series that has Dave Boland, Brad Marchand, Andrew Shaw, and Sean Thornton in it, and Andrew Ference, and Milan Lucic, and the entire Bruins team, it's not going to take more than a period to get the blood boiling against each other.
Did anybody mention to them that it's the Stanley Cup Finals as well?
Exactly.
I don't know if they ever notice that.
Completely agree. I don't understand where some of these guys... you know, think, oh, it's going to be boring. What do you mean it's going to be boring? It's two different style hockey teams that, you know, you got the speed.
They both play the game the right way, too.
Absolutely. So I think it's going to be a great series to watch.
Yep. It should be. I hope. Is the game still tied?
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
Okay. Lucic has got two for Boston, and Saad just scored to get Chicago on the board, 2-1.
Well, at least it's close.
Yes. Lucic scored. Almost all three goals have somewhat been similar in that they've gone high glove side on each goaltender.
Huh.
So, interesting. And they've both been pucked down behind the net, good cycle going, and the puck comes out front, and somebody's, you know, so Lucic and Saad have been sitting there to pick up the garbage.
Not bad. It's a good way to play the game.
Absolutely. So this series goes game one tonight, game two on Saturday the 15th, and then shifts over to Boston on the 17th, 19th, and 22nd. Kind of spaced out.
Back to Chicago on the 22nd.
Back to Chicago on the 22nd, excuse me. But kind of spaced out. You know, personally, I'm a fan of the, you know, back-to-back nights in one city and, you know, go maybe, you know, a day off so you can travel and then go two games in the other city. You know, I'm not a huge fan of the, I know the NHL and the Players Association don't like to do the back-to-back nights. I get that, but I just feel that that it takes away a little bit of the momentum. At least on the fan perspective. And also, it takes away some of the edge that you get. You know, Boston plays a real hard physical game, and, you know, it could be one of either, it could be go either way in that they need the time to recover to be able to play that physical game, which might lead to the advantage for Chicago to play back-to-back nights, or Chicago needs that extra night to recover from getting pounded all game long, you know, and so it works to Boston's advantage playing two nights in a row. So, I just think it's some of that mind, mental edge, mental mind game stuff that I find fascinating.
And it would be nice even if it was every other day at least, you know. But instead it's Wednesday, Saturday. So you got 2 days off in between. I'd like to see it at least every other day. Like you said, playing a back-to-back would be awesome. But it's all in the PA and the CBA, so...
Yeah,
I get that. See it, unfortunately.
Speaking of CBA, something for next time. They're talking about, you know, you mentioned hybrid icing. That's one thing on the docket. Another thing is possibly shrinking, changing some of the goaltending pads.
Net dimensions.
They changed the net dimensions. That's for definite. But they also are talking about shrinking the pad size or how they get measured. You know. So stuff to look at possibly during the summer.
Yep.
And just saw this come through the bottom of the screen. The Flyers acquire Mark Streit from the Islanders for a 4th-round pick and a prospect.
They acquired the rights to him.
The rights to him, I believe, yeah.
Was the technical.
Yeah.
Technical term there.
Not sure he really fits there. You know, he's a lefty.
Does anybody Philly signs ever fit there?
No.
Fair enough.
Good point. And on that note, I think we'll leave it at that. And
Board of Governors meeting for the vote to bring the Vancouver AHL franchise to Utica, New York is tomorrow night, so everybody cross your fingers. Hopefully we get AHL hockey back here at the Odd. The state did commit to $1 million to upgrades, so that's a good sign.
Indeed. And it would be great to actually have something on that side of the thruway to complete thruway puck.
This podcast could become very heated at times.
Absolutely. Also, NHL awards are going to be announced during games 2 and 3, I believe. Kind of a chintzy way of doing it, but what do you expect from Gary Bettman and company?
Boo. Oh, sorry. Oops. Just practicing for the Cup award ceremony.
Absolutely. You know, that's the good thing about L.A. being gone, because they botched it last year. You do know that diehard fans in Boston and Chicago will uphold the tradition of booing Gary Bettman.
I can't wait.
Cannot at all.
My lack of sleep can, but hey.
Did you see on Puck Daddy where they did the Gary Bettman Stanley Cup beard edition, and they took the beards off of the players, you know, on the Blackhawks and on the Bruins, and put their beards on Chara? Or not, no. On Chara, excuse me, on Bettman. So Chara's beard was on him one picture. Jager's mutton chops was on another. It was pretty entertaining. You give it a look. It's on Puck Daddy. I think it got posted this morning. So,
very nice.
On that note, we will call it a night from Amherst.
And from New York Mills, don't forget to check us out on iTunes. Search Through a Puck. Check out the blog, barrelsports.blogspot.com. If you've won our Twitter handles, listen to the last episode. They're on there, or the one before, or the one before. And it's easier to do it that way. I think that'll be it until maybe next week. If not next week, it'll be towards the end of the month.
Yeah.
I think that'll about do it.
And the next episode gets us to double digits, episode 10, either sometime late next week or at the end of the final.
Yeah. All right. Well, another episode concluded. We hope to have you all listen in again next time. It'll be on Twitter, so be sure to check it out.